the tabletop takeaway.
Game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop takeaway.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
I'm Charlie McCarran.
And I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And today we are going to be continuing our series on numerical coordination games with The Mind. So just a reminder, if you didn't see the last episode, numerical coordination games, basically a subgenre of co-op games where players are trying to coordinate on making a sequence of generally cards, numbered cards, increase in order, but with limited communication. So very specific subgenre there. But in any case...
But we had three of them.
But we had three of these games.
Yes.
And, they're pretty fun.
So. Yes. So The Mind consists of a deck of 100 numbered cards, numbered 1 through 100. It also has some throwing star cards and some life cards, and I guess also some level cards, which are used just to track the round, basically. And the way it works is each round, you have a number of cards in your hand equal to the round number. So round one, you get one card, two, you get two, and so forth. And the objective is just to put these cards in a pile in the middle of a table in order. But the thing is, everyone is playing in real time. So you all sort of look at the middle of the table, and then at some point, someone puts a card there, and hopefully it's the lowest card. Because if it isn't the lowest card, the whole group loses a life. And so you just keep doing this. So until you've all played all of the cards in your hand, you just keep putting down cards whenever you think you're ready. There's also the throwing stars, which I'm not sure whether throwing stars, but the group can agree to use a throwing star, in which case everyone discards the lowest card in their hand, which is really the only form of communication allowed in the game. Although it's fairly useful communication. It's more useful because it gets cards out of your hand, really.
But also everyone can see what the lowest one is in your hand. And if you have something, you know, in between those two cards, like, hey, I know I need to play before you. And that's really important information to have.
Yeah. So overall, very simple game. You just keep going with the difficulty increasing every round until you lose all of your lives. And then you see how far you got, which for us was, I think, level six.
I think we completed level five, yeah.
But yeah.
Whoops.
It gets hard later on. You do get more resources as the rounds go on in certain rounds or levels. You get back lives or you get back throwing stars, but it ramps up.
I honestly had forgotten about the throwing stars until we played this time, and I think that's a great thing to have in the game as a kind of an alternative form of communication, where like someone can just raise their hand that they want to use a throwing star, then everyone else can see them too. It's like, oh no, I want to play this card, but maybe that card's the wrong card to play. And it's just really interesting, like, how you can still have conversations and dynamics even though you're not communicating. You're not saying words. You're not hinting at things or counting. Hopefully you're not counting, but, you know, do what you do.
So that is one thing, which is that there is a very easy way to win at the game, which is if everyone just counts in their head and then plays a card.
Like number of seconds per number. So
So
wait 10 seconds to play the 10. And
yes. Exactly.
My game group, I loved playing it with them the first time. And then someone mentioned that and we tried it. And it's just not fun that way.
Yeah.
It's still an interesting experiment to see, are you counting same seconds that I'm counting?
But what's your BPM? What's your innate BPM?
Yeah, what's your BPM? The thing that I think is really cool about this game is how we start to develop a understanding of time relative to each other, and if I have a 20, how long should I wait? And we went pretty fast Like I think we spent like 2 seconds and then threw down like a 15 or something.
Yeah, we went way too fast.
But that made it more fun.
I had a 10, actually. 11, and 12, and I missed my window.
Yeah, that was probably my fault.
No, that was my fault.
No.
We were all ready to hop in there.
Yeah.
Well, the first, I suppose the first play really sets the pace.
Yeah, but it's only one card, too.
Yeah, it's like,
first level.
I don't know. I have a 5. How long should I wait?
I had a 62. I'm going to be here a while.
I had a 44, so I figured I'd just play it after the first card played. I was kind of
when
going...
When we have one card each.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you have very few cards, you can sort of go off probabilities and look at the ordering rather than the timing. But I think that does not scale very well.
It does not, no. Especially when I got 3 cards that were adjacent to each other.
Yeah.
Like,
oof. Oof.
Yeah, but the most fun moment was we had a series where we were just right in sync.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a 19 and 21. I was just going to play them right away. And then somehow you snuck in with your 20 between them.
Well, and I had a card right before yours. I had to get mine in before you. And then you put yours down. Then Ananda put his down. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That was a whole combo.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah, and I think that's where this game really starts to shine for me is when you can have those moments where you really actually feel like, did we plan that? Did we know that was happening?
Because
it shouldn't have been that close. And I mean, a lot of it was luck, but it still feels really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is probably a little bit of, would this be survivorship bias?
Yeah.
But
you remember when they're really close.
Yes, you remember when they're really close, and then when you fail, you don't remember that.
Yeah, I dumped all that pretty much.
Which I think is pretty cool, honestly, because you still have memorable moments in the game, mm-hmm. even if they might be more random than you think.
Mm-hmm.
You scaled the mountain peaks? Okay, I'll stop.
But yeah,
because I think it is just interesting how fun a game that's just numbers 1 through 100 can be, including the game
like we talked about last time.
The game, which was
and the game, the mind.
Yep. It's like, why are we as humans so enamored with like
counting,
sequencing, ordering things?
Well, as an accountant, I can tell you.
Yeah, tell us. Why do we love spreadsheets so
much? No, we like organization. We like sorting things. We like things to be clean. Mm-hmm. You know, you have that innate draw to that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some people do. Other people do not. But that's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm going to hop in with my takeaway really quick because it ties into my previous takeaway, which is the communication. The restriction of communication here is even more intense than the game. And I think that the way they set up the mind is really, really interesting because they focused on the communication restriction instead of having it be a lighter element like it is in the game. And I think that focus really makes it more interesting, and having it be real time as well, where it's not turn-based, like you are in it with each other and you're experiencing it together versus one at a time, you're in your own section, your own corner. And so I think, like, all of that combined, like, you're communicating in ways you didn't know or you don't normally use.
Yeah. And I've heard from different people about, like, what should be allowed or not. And it's like, maybe even, like, putting your hand closer to the middle technically shouldn't be. But because they say, like, in the rules, just no, like, hint system that you have. So I think it's more fun to have those, like, I'm inching towards it, looking at each other. Should we do it or not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that too. Because that's when you know, like, oh, this person has something coming up.
Mm-hmm.
How close are they? You don't know still. Like, you have no knowledge of it.
Yeah.
And I personally love body language as a way of communicating. Like, I think it's a really fun way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I had a 90 something, or I had 3 over 90 cards.
Yeah.
And so I literally sat back in my chair and just waited.
Yeah.
But, like, that was a very intentional choice as I changed my posture.
Oh, okay. I guess I didn't think about that.
Oh, body language is a huge part of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know you guys like it based on our game of Hanabi, which we'll talk about. The most hint-full game of Hanabi.
I've never seen an exclamation point in body language, but it was there during Hanabi.
Yeah. So one thing about the mind, in comparison to the game, like describing them, they sound so similar to
each
other.
They sound identical. Yeah.
Yeah. But they are so different.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it is because, you know, the game is turn-based and is more flexible in that you have several different piles you can put the card on.
Yeah.
But the game feels more like a sort of traditional card game, kind of.
Mm.
Yeah. Not like a specific one, but just,
just
the general notion of, okay, we have cards, we're going to play them on the table. The mind, the cards... It doesn't feel like a card game. The cards are just sort of a tool.
Vehicle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's really about sort of simulating other people in your head, right? Mm. Trying to predict how you would act in their shoes and how they might act and how long they might wait to play a card that's higher or lower than whatever you have.
Yeah. That's the satisfying part that we... what series was it we were talking about? Trying to guess what someone else will be thinking. Maybe in, like, word association games. Or, like, Just One or, like, those kind of games where...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The fun part is trying to figure out what would they think.
Why would they think this would help me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like in the game, you aren't really trying to figure out what other people are thinking.
No.
No, I suppose not.
No, that's more like a strategy, like, okay, what's your area that you need to focus on? I'll focus on a different area if that's like a beneficial strategy. In the mind, you don't really have that at all.
Hmm.
Like, it's just really, but you are more in sync, right? You are trying to figure out,
yeah,
like, what would Charlie think he would need to play this, and what timing would Charlie use
versus
Trevor?
It's about syncing up.
Yeah.
And constantly, like, estimating based on our past plays.
Right. But then we're all adjusting our thresholds.
Yeah.
And so then,
then we miss it. Yeah, maybe that's part of it. It's like predicting is so fun as humans, too. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Okay, we did that one a little too quickly. Now, maybe next time we'll do it a little longer.
Yeah, maybe not 4 seconds per 10. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... thinking about it, that round where we were all just really in sync, right? Where we had just... things went ridiculously well. You had these tiny margins between the cards, and yet they still somehow went in order. I mean, that... Yeah, I was sort of... talking about this earlier, but that does make up for all of the times when we messed up.
Yeah,
the game is trying to get you toward that experience, and I think this is probably my takeaway. But so I mentioned survivorship bias, and I think one way to look at it is you have a game like this. People have repeated interactions very rapidly because it's a real-time game and you can play a lot of rounds in a short amount of time. And the game is sort of farming those interactions for moments like that where everybody is in sync or they feel like they're in sync, which is sort of the experience the game is selling, right? The experience the game is selling is you are all going to be in sync, like you are one mind,
right?
And you know, you're playing things together. And whether you are in sync or whether it's just random, but you remember it because it felt like you were in sync, doesn't really matter because either way you're getting that feeling. And so I guess my takeaway is that you can sort of farm games for experiences like this by just relying on...
probabilities?
Yeah, relying on probabilities, relying on random chance to deliver great experiences. And then... making the negative, like last episode, we talked about the peak end rule a bit. This is related. Just suppressing the times when they don't have the experience and then elevating the experience itself, because the experience of being in sync is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So that people do walk away with that. Mm-hmm. Just like even if it's just random. I'm not saying it is completely random, but I'm saying that a good part of it is probably random. Mm-hmm.
Especially when it's super close.
Yes, but it still feels good.
It feels great.
And you can farm games for that experience if you set them up right.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think having the stages kind of replenish some of those resources that you'll maybe be losing, but just casually, like, it's not like, you know, oh, you lost this, here, you get another one. It's like, oh, we made it to the next stage, we get a reward for that. Yeah. Awesome. And they, you know, weight that up front so you get a lot of replacements as you learn the game. And then as you get later into it, you have few of those landlines or, like, you know, those life preservers to, like, bring you back to shore. Mm-hmm. So you have a higher chance of losing your last life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, yeah, I think that was a really good setup how they did that, especially for first-time players, because it's tough to get into that mindset of real-time, how do we not communicate with each other while communicating?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I think is so cool that the Mind does that very few games do, we had our real-time games series last, and Skyrockets came a little bit to this idea of, like, you're not just going as fast as you can, you're kind of trying to time it out for the perfect amount of time.
Right.
But the Mind is so cool. I love to see more games, maybe there are a few, that have your judgment of time as kind of like the main mechanic. Like, how close can we get with our own interpretation of what time is? So, like, as a real-time game, I think this one is one of the coolest. Because it doesn't use any timers.
No, yeah.
It only uses the player's perception of time.
You need to play your card as long as it's the lowest card before someone plays a higher card.
Mm-hmm.
And just when do you play that?
Yeah. Well, my takeaway is actually the throwing stars. I kind of had forgotten they were in the game.
Yeah.
But I like that idea that at some point during this real-time thing, we can all raise our hands. I kind of forgot that was how that worked.
Yeah.
That it's like, we all want to use a throwing star to get rid of our lowest cards. So I think just having something like that in a game where you can all as a group agree to do something that's going to be beneficial, and everyone does that in their own hand. So it might be more beneficial for certain players or not, or more, yeah.
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 Yeah, I really like those kind of added mechanics just to make the game a little bit softer and a little bit less brutal. Which, you know, same thing with the game where they have four different piles and you can heal. The Mind has the stars and the lives, just to kind of help offset that difficulty of being perfect with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think having that in a game is super important if it's like this.
Yeah. Well, we had fun playing the Mind, so.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Tune in next time for one of my favorite games, Hanabi.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.